Good morning, Noel and Henry. Let's begin with you, Henry. You note in your piece that Louisiana is threatening to wash away.
Yeah, I mean, it's arguably one of the big issues facing certainly Louisiana and the coastal Louisiana, but, you know, arguably the country as well. The kind of erosion and coastal change that Louisiana is experiencing is sort of, and is sort of on the front lines of, is something that is happening elsewhere in the country and threatens to, is already, you could say, displacing communities and could displace thousands and hundreds of thousands of millions maybe of people in the country. And, you know, like you said, it is threatening all kinds of other things as well, sort of archaeological sites and historical artifacts and sort of economic interests and businesses and communities and families and people ultimately, and it's a very serious issue, and Louisiana is doing a lot to try and address it, but it's a really big challenge for the state.
Noel, as noted, you're an environmental editor and studying issues all over the country, if not the world. How significant is the Louisiana challenge compared to other environmental challenges that you have witnessed?
I think it's a pretty significant challenge, and it's really emblematic of the coastal challenges that are going to be experienced and are starting to be felt in many parts of the country. I think a lot of times when we talk about sea level rise, people get bogged down in sort of the politics of climate change, but really these are actual impacts that people are experiencing, whether there's an argument over what caused them or not. They are real, genuine problems that individuals are facing, and it often seems like this problem that's happening far away in other parts of the world. You hear about islands that need to be displaced, but in the U.S. it's really attacking communities all over. Whether it's up here on Plum Island, they're experiencing extensive erosion and sea level rise impacts, but also up and down the East Coast, they're seeing these problems as well. And they found that the coastal Southeast in particular is, for some reason, appears to be experiencing higher levels of sea level rise than anywhere else in the world. It's rising almost six times faster, or it has, from 2011 mm-hmm. to 2015, than it is globally around the world. So it really is a major issue. And Louisiana has been confronting it head on and is running into all sorts of questions about how do you address these challenges? How do you decide what to save? How do you try and remediate the coastline to try and weather the storm, as it were? And those questions are going to be posed in many communities throughout the country. And I think Louisiana is one of the first communities to be answering them and will hopefully be able to offer somewhat of a model to the rest of the country.
Your number is 877-217-5757, wherever you are, 877-217-5757. Locally in Baton Rouge, you can dial 297-5633, and our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Two seasoned reporters on the environment, Noel Swan, who edits the environmental stories in the Christian Science Monitor and at csmonitor.com, along with Henry Gass, who has done an amazing collection of stories about our dwindling coastline, and they have been here in our midst reporting on an issue that many of us may now take for granted, and quite frankly, I don't think climate change is a huge issue in Louisiana, but Noel, based on what you just said, perhaps we should be talking much more about it.
Well, I think the matter of climate change itself is a very large question, and at the moment it seems to be one that is happening in scientific and political communities. But when you're looking at what happens to individuals, you can look at individual flooding and these kind of things. Why it's happening and whose fault it is really doesn't matter much to the individuals that Henry met and reported on. It really doesn't matter if you arrive home and you've been away and your house is flooded and your belongings and your lifetime of memories are ruined, it really doesn't matter exactly the politics behind it. The question is, what do you do about how to mitigate the risks that the economic risks, the risks to livelihoods and communities that are being posed by these challenges that are happening? That, you know, that that statistic that I mentioned about the coastal southeast, they're talking about from 2011 to 2015. So this is not projections. This is things that have happened, and these are problems that people are facing and have already faced. So it is not really a matter of debate or discussion if you're contending with waters that are lapping at your door, quite literally.
Henry, you note the statistic that we often hear in Louisiana, that we're losing a football field of land every hour due to a combination of issues, the gradual sinking of land, sea level rise, and human development. And you say that in the absence of broad federal support, state officials in Louisiana have had to go it alone and have had to make some tough decisions. What are some of the tough decisions that are in the offing in the near term?
Well, I would say I think that a major one is essentially deciding which communities get protected and which don't. That's one major decision that they're looking into right now. The story mentions the community of Ile de Jean Charles, a Native American community in Terrebonne Parish, and they did receive help from the federal government to relocate, but they're just the first of what could be many communities in coastal Louisiana who at least consider whether they would like to relocate or not. And essentially, with something like this, the state is investing $50 billion to try and protect and restore the coastline and try and mitigate and remediate sort of all the changes that are being wrought on the coastline. And for every solution that they explore and implement, it's going to involve choices. If you build a levee, for example, you're going to have communities inside the levee who are protected by it, but you necessarily have to exclude people who are going to be outside the levee. And so for every solution, you're going to have to make a choice over who benefits from it and which communities don't. And another example I can think of is when I was down there, is one of the big, probably one of the most long-term, one of the best solutions for the long-term is they're planning on diverting the hundreds of thousands of tons of sediment from the Mississippi down into the bayou, into the sort of down the coastline, and to sort of rebuild some of the marshlands there that are being eroded away. And, you know, that offers a lot of benefits in the long term. It rebuilds land, it rebuilds the marsh and protects the coastline. And so you have long-term protection and sort of these other benefits, but it's also changing the salinity regime of the water, which hurts the fishing industry down there, which is a massive economic resource for the region and an economic driver for the region. So it's tough because the state is rightfully tackling this head on, but there are lots of short-term issues that are created by long-term.
The state is 10 years into an ambitious 50-year, $50 billion master plan to protect and restore its coastline. But Noel, is this sufficient? Is this going to do the job?
I think it's still an open question whether that will be enough to do the job. My guess is probably not. We probably need to think about some more funding, potentially federal funding. But that, you know, that is a difficult quandary to be able to try and make that case. There are of course some folks who wonder whether people should be simply just leaving the area rather than remediating, And that is that's an open question, and that's one that coastal communities all over the U.S. are going to be struggling with as well. And it's, you know, it's a tough one for folks who live on the coast of Louisiana, including some of the people that Henry spoke with. You know, Jerry Victoriano explained to our reporters that, you know, this is home, and I imagine that's something that really resonates with a lot of your listeners. That it's one thing for folks in the heartland to say, well, you know, if the waters are coming at your door, why don't you just leave and retreat inward, but inland. But if that's where you have grown up, where your parents, where your grandparents, where your roots really are, that is a much more difficult question.
Henry, you talked with many of the people along the coast. Are they concerned about what's going on?
Absolutely. This is something that they experience on an almost sort of weekly basis. Everyone talks about, you know, hurricanes and the threats from hurricanes and tropical storms and those things. But, in towns like Jean Lafitte, when I went there, they were telling me that just, like, heavy rainfall floods houses there these days, that it just takes sort of a front to come through and drop, you know, several inches of rain for it to fill up in their kitchens and living rooms and things. So they're living with this sort of week in, week out. And a lot of them I spoke to said, you know, they're getting to the end of their tethers, really, and there's only so much more that they think they can take, both sort of financially and emotionally. I mean, like Noel said, there's a heavy emotional toll to having your house flooded so regularly and having to move out, like take all of your, you know, cherished belongings and put them like on top of the the chest of drawers, or leave them high up in their house so they don't get soaked, and then having to move back and sort of living this kind of transient lifestyle where you don't really get to sort of be comfortable in your own home because it's always getting flooded. And some of them are thinking, you know, is this worth it anymore? Maybe I should just move somewhere else. But then again, like Noel said, there's, you know, there are very, I'm sure you know, very strong ties to that region for the people who live there. They've lived there for generations and generations, and they're, you know, it's home, and they're very reluctant to leave, and they want to live there, but, you know, they know that, you know, it's in 50 years it's not going to look the same as it does now. I think everyone is aware that, you know, even with all the things that are going on, the coastline is going to change and it's going to move, and just the way of life down there is going to be different decades from now than it was when they were growing up.
And eventually it will affect New Orleans in a huge way. It already has to some extent. Hurricanes get to the urban center of our state a lot quicker than they used to because so much of the marshland has been wiped out. But until that happens, until New Orleans is affected immensely, will it get the kind of attention that it should?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's something else I heard a lot when I was down in Louisiana and in these sort of in the southern parishes outside the city, is that there's sort of a tendency, sort of there has been a tendency in the past to be more reactionary than proactive, I suppose, that you know, it's not really looked at or talked about or addressed much until there's a disaster like Hurricane Katrina or something like that, and then there's a sort of a big response to it. And I mean, I think you can be encouraged to see with the Coastal Master Plan and everything that the state's trying to do to be proactive and to try and restore the coast before that kind of disaster happens. But yeah, a lot of people think that mentality of, you know, not really taking the problem seriously until there's a disaster is still quite strong and quite present in the state. So,
You quote a man named Reggie Dupree who says, "My ancestors arrived in South Louisiana in the 1780s, eight generations ago. We don't have eight generations in the future. What I'm trying to do here is by another 75, 80 years. What's going to happen in 150 years? I think this is probably all underwater. Is there a sense of inevitability?
I think there is, yeah. I mean, it's... I mean, like I said, I mean, no one's fooling themselves down there. No one thinks that they're going to be able to rebuild the coastline and make things like turn back, make it like it was, you know, it was 50 years ago and everything's going to be all right. I think people realize that there are serious changes underway and things are never going to be the same. That said, there's also a very, there is also optimism. I mean, I think, you know, Reggie does think he can, you know, can buy his communities in Terrebonne Parish sort of 75 years and sort of make that transition to sort of the new normal really a bit easier and a bit less traumatic for the communities in down there. And I think there's some optimism and some hope that this is being taken seriously and that these changes can be managed properly this new reality, the fact that the Gulf Coast is going to be a lot closer and a lot more, they're going to have to be living with a lot more water than they're used to in the past is going to be something they will be able to adapt to over time and be able to handle and manage.
Well, it's a remarkable five-part series from the Christian Science Monitor and csmonitor.com, where you can go and read more. Henry Gass is the reporter who's been at the forefront of this, and Noel Swan, the editor. And we thank you for joining us today. Henry, it's apparent you like the people of this region.
Yeah, very much. I mean, I was blown away really by their humor, I think. I mean, you know, I've talked about how they're sort of fully aware of the scale of challenge and how the coast is sort of inevitably going to change around them, but I was really heartened by their humor and their optimism and their joy about and their love for the region and their resilience and desire to sort of do something about it. So it was very nice to talk with them and hear their stories and let me into their lives for a few days.
Well, thank you for joining us. Henry Gass, Noel Swan from the Christian Science Monitor.